studio, DeMay Roberts features the world premiere play Broken Promises by Olga Sanchez. She talks with Danielle Milan, founder and artistic director of Teatro Milagro, and actor Giovanni Alva. Olenka Ajinjo of Rejoice Diaspora Dance Theater about their performance of Ancestry in Motion. At 11:30 on Art Focus, we'll hear how women used art and humor to campaign for social justice around the world in 2015. Thanks for listening, and thanks, KABU members, for your generous support in 2015.
And stay tuned now for an interview with Spencer Sunshine of Political Research Associates about the ongoing situation in Harney County and the ties between the armed white militants and other right-wing extremists. Good night, Joanna.
Good night, Ken. Good night, Mike.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
A small group of armed, white, right-wing militants are occupying buildings at a national wildlife refuge outside Burns, Oregon. They claimed when they arrived that they were there to support Dwight and Stephen Hammond, two Harney County cattle ranchers who had been convicted of federal arson charges. The Hammonds are being sent back to federal prison after the government won an appeal over their sentencing. Yet the militants, led by Ammon Bundy, seem to have another agenda. KABU reporter Paul Rowland spoke with Spencer Sunshine, an associate fellow with Political Research Associates, to learn more.
Tell us, you're kind of in the spotlight since you had this article that's gone viral in the internet. I studied Oregon's militia movement. Here's five things you need to know. Give us a little bit of background. They're getting so much attention. These people have occupied this Malheur Wildlife Refuge station. Who are these people, and should we be paying so much attention to them?
I think they've gotten a lot of attention they don't deserve, but the attention is here, and so we need to, like, show who these people are. It's almost all out-of-staters, as far as we can tell. There's maybe 20 or 30 people there. They seem to be almost all from out-of-state, people from Arizona, a vehement Islamophobe from Arizona, a vigilante Border Patrol member from there, three of Cliven Bundy's sons from the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. These are some dyed-in-the-wool radical right ideologues who are leading a paramilitary action to try to force the privatization of publicly held lands, or to remove all restrictions on the use of publicly held lands for ranching and mining. There was a march earlier on Saturday. This group was splintered off of a march to do the clearly had the plan ready in the background to do this takeover, but there was a march of about 300 people in Burns in support of this family, the Hammonds, which are an interesting case that we should talk about. It'll be germane to people who follow the Green Scare sentencings in particular. The people who organized the march in Burns weren't from the area, but they were from the state. In Oregon right now, there's a very large patriot movement. It's declining. This is the movement that is the successor to the militia movements of the 90s. Looks the same. There's some different kinds of groups now. Organizations like the Oath Keepers, this more decentralized militia-style group, the Three Percenters. There's old-style militias. There's people who are sovereign citizens who are all part of this movement.
And all these groups, it'd be helpful to get a little bit of background on each one, but, you know, we don't have that much time. But, okay, Three Percenters, what does that mean?
The name refers to the mythical number of Americans who actually picked up arms and fought in the American Revolution. You know, only about a third of American colonialists supported it, and according to them, I don't believe that this number is actually accurate, but that's how many people, like, picked up guns and fought the British. So these are people. It was co-founded by a guy named Mike Vanderbau, who was an old militia guy from Alabama in the 90s, and he thought the militias were too infiltrated by the Fed. So this was a more decentralized idea, and it's primarily around gun rights. They claim that they're going to engage in armed resistance if there's any restrictions that are further restrictions that are put on private gun ownership, or if there's any attempt to seize. I mean, they believe this conspiracy theory that Obama's about to, like, outlaw private gun ownership. So they promise armed resistance if that happens.
So these are some of the, you said the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, and some of these other groups who are kind of inherited this older, the militia movement, as you called it. in the 90s, which obviously goes even further back. But, you know, you said that these groups are there because of what happened with the Hammond family. But I understand that the Hammond family is not actually supporting them, nor are some of these other groups that planned that march to begin with.
Almost no one is supporting them. The Hammond family are not supporting them and have disowned the action, is my understanding. The groups that came to the Patriot Movement groups that came to support the Hammond family and held a big march on Saturday are also disowning the action, even though we believe some of the individual members of these groups have gone into the armed encampment. For example, many of the Oregon 3%er groups have disavowed this. There's a statement they put out, but there was a 3%er flag flying over the encampment. There was these big flags on poles flying, and at the top was a 3%er flag. We're pretty sure one or two individual 3%ers entered the encampment, but they may have left. There may be individual Oath Keepers in the encampment, although the Oath Keepers themselves did not ask the people to go to Burns at all, because they said the Hammonds hadn't really invited people. The Hammonds were kind of on the fence about how much support they wanted. So there's varying levels of support here.
It could be also be understandable if these groups formally disavow this, you know, because of the heat that would come down on them if they actively supported it, while it might be in ideological alignment with what they are for, so they might be informally supporting it. I could see that happening. Do you see that as a possibility, or are these people just pretty much off on their own completely?
No, I mean, that's my guess. I would guess that the grassroots members of these groups are probably in solidarity with the action. I think that it's in alignment with their ideological values. You know, it all fits in. The leadership of these movements have been for years decrying that we live in a tyrannical socialist government and that armed resistance is necessary. Usually they're like, not quite yet. We're not calling for it quite yet, but they're always, at the same time, they're always clearly saying, I mean, it's like if you say we live under a tyranny and resistance to tyranny is legitimate, then like, they're clearly calling, you know, for blood, but meanwhile trying to disavow it. So I feel like probably what's happened is some of the younger members of the movement have taken them at their word and saying, we agree that we live, you know, in a tyrannical socialist government, and the very fact that there can be a wildlife refuge for them is socialism, and they're taking up arms. So I'm sure a lot of the grassroots members of the Patriot Movement are very supportive of this, but the leadership is not. I think it was not known beforehand what would happen. Some of these other groups were seeking hard to develop community connections in Burns. A lot of the folks, community in Burns, were very upset. The outsiders were coming in. People put up fires saying no Bundy militia here, no militias wanted. And so the Oregon-based groups were trying to cultivate at least an acceptance of their presence there and wanted to have a nonviolent march, which they did do. And now these other group of people, they didn't get signed on, they didn't tell the others what they were going to do, just went into the action. And so I think people are also, you know, feeling one-upped and rubbed the wrong way. And they didn't sign on to it. It's heavy stuff. They may all die in a shootout. We don't know what's going to happen. You know, once you pick up guns and denounce, you know, they're occupying a federal facility. Like, you know, I'm sure they know that this may end in a variety of ways, including them being killed.
Well, do you think, I've read that the reason they had a hands-off approach to the Bundy Ranch in Nevada last year was at least in part because of things like what happened at Waco and Ruby Ridge?
Most people who monitor the far right believe that the federal government has an unwritten but enacted policy since the disasters at Ruby Ridge and Waco not to directly confront armed majority white far right actors. This worked out for them at the Justice Township in Montana with the Montana Freeman in 96. After a long siege, the Freeman did surrender without a firefight. After September 11th, when all the terrorism laws changed, you know, all kinds of groups, all kinds of more radical groups got totally whomped and jumped on by the feds. But there was a strange exception where right-wingers, if they didn't actually go and directly, you know, assassinate somebody, were basically left untouched. This seems to be what happened at the Bundy Ranch. I mean, their supporters trained weapons on federal agents. Not just were they not confronted then, they weren't arrested later. Nothing happened to Bundy afterwards. He's still illegally grazing on, you know, public land. I'm not a great fan of the feds, but there has to be some mechanism to hold land collectively, and that's what it is. And he is not responsible to anybody. He can just take all this collective resources and do what he wants with it, and the feds have done absolutely nothing about it. So I think the feds have completely created a situation where these people believe that they can do whatever they want to with guns, and the feds will stand by. And they've sort of opened this door, and Ammon Bundy and his friends have walked through it.
Yeah, it seems like at least the feds could have tied them up in court for years, if nothing else.
I mean, it's always painful to me because I don't really want to call for the federal government to do any particular thing against people. You know, I'd rather see the masses of people in our country, you know, put pressure on individuals to do the right thing. But the feds, there's many things the feds could have done. The feds could be doing things right now. They're not even blockading the wildlife headquarters so people can come in with reinforcements. More people are coming in with guns and with food and all this stuff. They're not even blocked from entering. As far as I can tell, they're doing absolutely nothing. I know that they're there. I know they're talking about what they're going to do. But they're, you know, letting them build their forces up. I think they want this to be, they want this to expand. They want other people to do this. Ammon Bundy has said this is the tip of the spear. He wants to launch a radical right-wing revolution with this action. It's almost this Leninist vanguard action. They're almost like Iskra, like they're the spark. They want to spark the prairie fire, but it's, you know, a right-wing revolution. It's not a progressive movement.
So you wanted to talk about the Hammonds. I think, you know, since they're kind of at the start of this, I've been doing some research. They've been involved in disputes with the Wildlife Refuge, with the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for at least a couple decades. This stuff goes way, way back. You say that they don't support what's happening, but do they themselves have connections with any of these groups that you know of?
It doesn't look like they do. Bundy had better connections. Bundy wasn't actually a Patriot Movement guy. He, I think, was allied with the 10th Amendment Center, if I'm correct in my memory. Similar kind of area, but not directly connected to some of the groups that came and allied with him. The Hammonds don't have strong connections. They've gotten in political disputes before. They have, as you said, disputes going back to the 90s. There's reports of them threatening to hurt different kinds of federal officials have come into conflict for many years. I mean, this wasn't just, I'm sure, for the their eventual arrest, this was the last straw. I think there's, like, convictions. There's some really very nasty, I believe there's a child abuse-style conviction in their history. And there's these two arsons, and I believe there were other arsons in which they were warned that it couldn't happen again and let off the hook. I don't believe that they're so in bed with these political movements. I believe that the movements have attached themselves. These movements, both the Bundy folks as well as the Patriot Movement people in Oregon, see their politics in the Hammonds rather than the other way around. But it fits in very cleanly with their ideology because it's a dispute between a rancher about the use of public land that they're allowed to use. These disputes are not about land that the Hammonds own. It's public land that they have a use rights on.
So
those were, like, the arson convictions. It wasn't on their land, I believe. It was on other land. It was on federal land.
So you mentioned, you know, before we started taping here that these people don't really represent the large body of disenchanted, disenfranchised people who, you know, maybe find a home in the Tea Party or whatever it might be, whether largely rural, of course, in this circumstance, but not only. But you don't see necessarily these occupiers, these militia people, as representing them. But do you see the risk that they, what they are doing, will actually inspire other people to do similar things?
I think the fact that the people at the Bundy Ranch, they have an ideology that they can hold off the federal government with guns. And the truth is the federal government is letting them do these things. But they can go turn around and go to their supporters and give examples like the Bundy Ranch and say, look, we did that, and their movement will grow. I believe if they're left unmolested, or if they win political changes, even if they are eventually surrender or whatever, but win, like, political concessions, that will grow their movement and that will make them more popular. Right now, my understanding, ranchers in that area of Oregon are not rushing to their side. They're not the vanguard of a mass movement in a way that sometimes very radical people can, you know, that are sort of upping the ante. They're standing aside from the groups of people that they're claiming to represent. I believe if they're successful, as I become older, I understand the saying, nothing succeeds like success so much more. Once you have something rolling, you create gravity, and people come to you as political movements. People are attracted to you because they see that you can do it. And so if they're able to pull this off, then there's going to be a really big problem, and then they really may gain more mass support.
Again, you had this article, which is out on the internet, with the U.S. Uncut, right? Published there. I studied Oregon's militia movement. Here's five things you need to know, which goes into some things we didn't get to talk about, including, I guess it's worth at least a superficial mention. You talked about the fact that eco-activists have been targeted. And this is like one of the first times, right, that under the so-called terrorism legislation that has targeted right-wingers.
It's a very weird case with the Hammonds. They're being sentenced under the 1996, it's the Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. Very rarely do domestic right-wingers this act apply to them. In this case, it's not. The arsons that were committed were not politically motivated arsons. The 96 Anti-Terrorism Act has been, I believe, it has been applied to some very strange, unpolitical cases in the past. People being busted with a bunch of drugs and guns sometimes. I've even heard stories that people who were were attempting to manufacture crystal meth somehow got this. It's a sentencing enhancer. It's what happened to all the Green Scare people, all the eco-saboteurs who were caught up in the big Green Scare sweep of the mid and late O's and were sentenced under the terrorism provisions. They were sentenced under this act. So it's very unusual that the Hammonds, it's being applied to the Hammond family. It is a really unfair case. There's certainly something wrong with the way it's been handled. They were sentenced for these two arsons. It's two members of the family. The judge gave them preferential treatment and did not, because it was arson on a federal land. There was a 5-year mandatory minimum. And the judge, for whatever reason, sentenced them far less than that minimum, I think like for a few months in one case and a year in the other. And so the prosecutors, the people in the federal judiciary, immediately stepped in and said, you can't do this. You can't just like these people and avoid the mandatory minimum. And so they appealed the sentence. And that's why these two members of the family went into jail, served time, left, and have to go back.